Well, someone who walks into an Orthodox church, whether they be Coptic or Greek, and they walk in from the outside, they could feel like an alien. There's no doubt.
Exactly.
It is what it is.
If you go to your average Joe on the street and you want to invite him to church, it's very intimidating to go to a liturgy. It's a big first step. We wanted to create like a smaller step for someone to come, and that's what we call the well.
Which is an after-liturgy gathering at the Church of Father Anthony Messa. He leads it, and we'll hear more about the well in just a moment, along with other, should I say, rather unorthodox approaches to reaching his community.
If you're trying to reach the people in this country, the way you present your message, the way you present your church, has oftentimes more to do with their acceptance than actually what it is you're presenting.
And welcome to another edition of Come Receive the Light, an outreach from the Orthodox Christian Network in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, with Father Christopher Metropoulos as the host, and I'm Mike Trout. Just when you think you know where you're going in a discussion, you sit down and talk with a priest from a Coptic Orthodox church, and then the interview goes in several new directions, and you get caught up in some different thinking than you thought you might, and well, that's exactly what happened to us as Father Chris sat down with Father Anthony Messa from St. Timothy and St. Athanasius Church in Arlington, Virginia, and we'll share that discussion with you in a few moments. We also have a second conversation with a young lady who has started, with two others, a blog site for singles. And I think you'll find this interesting whether you're single or not. If you're not familiar with Come Receive the Light, we are a nonprofit outreach. As I said, we're in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and we have a marvelous website called myocn.net. That's myocn.net. And I encourage you to check us out on the website. You can listen to this broadcast again and other past Come Receive the Light programs, plus participate in our blog called The Sounding. You can also listen to our full-time internet-only radio stations. There are three of them, along with several other things, video resources, other audio resources, and of course, our web store. You'll find it all at myocn.net.
And most importantly, I would say to remember that, you know, our souls are no less valuable because we're neither married nor monastic. We remain children of God. We remain made in His image.
There's a very insightful and thought-provoking new blog out there called OrthoGals. And Father Chris has as his first guest today one of the three founders of that blog, Bridget Strait.
Welcome to the show, Bridget.
Thank you, Father.
The tagline, so-called tagline of your blog is "Because Dating is Hard." So let me ask you, well, first of all, I think, why did you start the blog? And then why is dating hard?
We started the blog, frankly, out of frustration that there are so many snippets of good advice out there, and it's in a sea of trash. We wanted a place to put all of the wisdom that we've gained from our mothers, from our own experience. And we wanted to be able to discuss issues with other young women, to share humorous moments and to form a bit of a community, so that, you know, other Orthodox singles know that we aren't alone in this madness.
Okay. Why is dating hard today? I mean, I hear that from a lot of people. I'm married 30-plus years, and I would never want to go back, frankly, into the dating scene again. I don't know how God shined down on me and I found the woman I found. But tell us why dating is hard today. I mean, is it because you're an Orthodox Christian and you have certain standards, certain morals? I mean, what's the issue here?
Sure, that's part of it. I see dating as asking a question, and it's a question that's continually evolving. So it starts with, would I like to talk to this person further? And then it becomes, would I want to share a meal with this person? Would I like to see them more the next few weeks and months? Would I like to work through problems with them and share joys and have breakfast every morning, say prayers every night, raise children and face the world together? Mm-hmm. And there's just no universe in which asking that is not hard. It takes discernment and honesty and a huge amount of trust in yourself and the other person and God. In my opinion, honestly, being Orthodox makes it both harder and easier. It's far more difficult to find someone with whom you can share your life because it feels as if there's a shortage of Orthodox men. I don't know whether that's true or not.
Well, I don't know if there's a
limited.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a. I was actually talking about it the other day with some of our staff folks here, and I said, you know, OCN should begin Orthodox.com. And they said, what do you mean Orthodox.com? We got to add something to it, I said. But something like OrthodoxDating.com, there should be a place. There's eHarmony, there's this one, there's that one, ChristianSingles.com. And I'm saying to myself, okay, those are great. But then there should be a place where Orthodox Christians of all jurisdictions should come and they could form good, healthy social relations with one another. Now, if they developed into something better, that would be better in the sense of a marriage, fine. But in the meantime, at least they would meet in a safe ground.
There is a site called OrthodoxChristianDating.com, although I and most of the people I know have had not too much luck there. The flip side of having the smaller dating pool is that it does serve as a filter, especially if you meet at a college conference or someone else's wedding or a seminary event. Orthodox men who love God, who live their faith, are already more likely to be husband material for Orthodox women who value that.
Well, let's go for a minute to your blog. I'm curious to know, what kind of comments have you gotten from your readers? Any of them offer proposals for marriage? I mean, how does it work? Tell us about it.
The feedback's been pretty fantastic so far. The most gratifying, I would say, has been from other women saying that they found community here, that, that we've meant something in their lives. And there's been a surprising amount of that from Orthodox women and Catholic women, too. The response from men has been positive. I have not been proposed marriage to yet, and someone should see to that, I mean, really. One of my favorite comments, though, had to have been from a guy who got to read an article that's not out yet about some of the things that we look for in a gentleman. And he said, it's a tall, tall order. And all I could say was that, well, yes, but we do plan to keep them for 50-plus years, so there's nothing enticing us to settle.
Right. What kind of things don't you write about? I mean, what in your mind is sort of off limits on Ortho Gals?
Anything that needs to stay between an individual and their priest. We are not trying to be the be-all to end-all in dating advice or the hard and fast rules for any situation. We're also not into discussing big political or theological issues. We'll sometimes talk about things that apply to us, but we also generally try not to condemn those we disagree with. That's just not our job.
Today, TV shows, movies, and songs equate dating with having sex. Sex and dating is something that just goes along. It can be about hooking up. It's about thinking of ourselves. I don't know, from an Orthodox Christian perspective, we said on many times in this show that we are not defined as Orthodox Christians by our passions. Our sexuality is a beautiful gift from God. It's a part of our life, but it's not something that's active 100% of the time in our lives. It's a part of our life. It's a complement that God gives us to our life, especially to a couple in marriage to fulfill each other. What do you see out there in the dating scene as far as this equating dating with having sex? I mean, I'm older. I have a family. I'm married for over 30 years, like I told you. You're going to see this from a different perspective than I do. Tell me what's out there.
There is a lot of pressure, and that pressure does nothing good, but that's no surprise. That's been status quo my entire life. In the world at large, there's really missing that sense of honoring oneself or one's body. One of the problems that comes from this expectation of promiscuity is relating to other people as sexual options rather than as human beings, and it leads to all sorts of harassment, to sex being divorced from the idea of conception or raising children, and therefore to abortion. And also to things like the Steubenville case this spring, where a young lady was horribly assaulted, and both the perpetrators and everyone watching honestly didn't see a problem with what they were doing because they thought it was what anyone else would do. They couldn't conceive of any reason not to abuse her for their pleasure. I think that really speaks to an illness in how sex and just human personhood are seen.
Well, certainly it does. Can you share a quote from Scripture or the fathers or the saints that really keeps you grounded on your journey to find that mate?
My personal go-to is John 16:33. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Your life matters right now. You are a child of God right now. Theosis never involves getting everything you want when you want it, and this is the cross we get at this point in our lives. Someday, God willing, marriage will be our cross, but either way, God is working in us, and this time is a blessing too. Singlehood, it has its benefits, and we mustn't sit around just waiting for our lives to start. And most importantly, I would say to remember that, you know, our souls are no less valuable because we're neither married nor monastic. We remain children of God. We remain made in His image.
Thank you very much, Bridget, for being with us today.
Thank you.
The blog site that Father Chris and Bridget kept referring to is simply orthogals.com. O-R-T-H-O-G-A-L-S.com. Orthogals.com. And we'll have a link to that on our website at myocn.net. That's myocn.net. Hey, just a quick reminder that we're a nonprofit outreach. I've been mentioning this for a number of weeks now, but as a nonprofit, we depend upon your support, your financial support. And for the balance of the summer through the end of August, we have a marvelous opportunity for you to double any contribution you make to Come Receive the Light. A donor has stepped forward and said that they would match any of the gifts given to Come Receive the Light and the Orthodox Christian Network through the end of August. So if you can give a dollar or, well, some larger amount, it will be multiplied by two. Just go to the website, click on the Donate Now button on any of our website pages. Well, speaking of the summer coming to an end, do you have any plans for Labor Day weekend? There is a wonderful opportunity to end your summer vacation on a high note. The Greek Orthodox Metropolis of Atlanta, OCF Alumni and Young Adult Ministry presents Charlotte Whitewater Weekend, hosted by St. Nectarios Greek Orthodox Church there in the Atlanta area. This is an activity specifically for anyone 18 through 30, and you can find out more when you go to our website and click on the Charlotte Whitewater Weekend link we'll have there on our Come Receive the Light page. And now with our feature conversation with Father Anthony Messa from St. Timothy and St. Athanasius Coptic Church. Here again is Father Chris.
Father Anthony, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Father, the Coptic Church is perceived by some to be one of the most ethnic among the Orthodox churches. Do you think that's accurate? Is it changing? Help us understand it, please.
I understand where the perception comes from, and I think one of the primary reasons for that is the age of the Coptic Church in America in relation to many of the other Orthodox churches. The Coptic Church didn't really start to pick up steam until the 80s and even the 90s, really, where we started to see a lot of growth of the immigration from Egypt. So because of that, the church in America still has a lot of first-generation immigrants. In addition, because of the situation in Egypt these days, the number of immigrants that's coming is quite a lot. Mm-hmm. However, with that said, it's definitely changing. And while I think the Coptic Church in America is growing at a great rate in that, we have a mix of those who are coming with the Egyptian culture, but we also have a group of young people who are American in their culture, and there are some cities and some areas where they are by far more dominant. And then the other thing that affects the landscape is that you have churches, of which I'm blessed to be part of one of them, which is really focused on being an outreach to the community and is almost intentionally trying to be acultural or to not have that ethnic culture in it so that we really can reach out to the community around us.
I sense no accent, so I would imagine that you're born here in the United States, right?
Yeah, I was born in Jersey. If that counts, then
Jersey,
yeah.
Okay, yes. That certainly counts. And then so you're born here, but yes. Probably your parents or your grandparents are from overseas?
Yeah, my parents were both born and raised and got married in Egypt.
Okay.
And then they moved over here and had kids here.
Wonderful. Okay. I noticed that you have two kinds of services every week at your church on Sundays. One, it says, is traditional Eucharistic liturgy, and the second is called the well.
Yes.
What is the well? Can you tell us about that?
Sure. Like I said, our church, we really pride ourselves on wanting to reach out to the community. We feel that God took us out of Egypt and brought us to America so that we wouldn't just be a church of Egyptians, but we'd reach out to the community around us. So one of the things that we wanted to do was create a venue where people could invite their friends, their coworkers, their neighbors, their whatever, to church in a non-threatening kind of a way. For me, it's like when St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, that to Jews I became as a Jew, that I might win the Jews. And he said that I become all things to all men, that I might by all means save some. Mm. Well, this is our church's way of becoming all things to all men, specifically the community around us. If you go to your average Joe on the street and you want to invite him to church, it's very intimidating to go to a liturgy. It's something, especially if someone doesn't have any experience in traditional churches or liturgical services, it's intimidating. It's a big first step. So we wanted to create a way that we could create like a smaller step for someone to come, and that's what we call the well. It happens after the liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, basically we're in rented facilities, so we don't have a church building, so we kind of put away the church stuff, and then we kind of set up a more conducive environment for people coming from the outside. You grab yourself a cup of coffee, maybe a cookie or two or something like that, and then you hear a nice spiritual topic being discussed. And it's a very easy way that you can invite someone into the church. It's our weekly form of an outreach. You know, a lot of churches will have like a yearly outreach event or a festival or something where they invite people. Well, we found that that isn't nearly as effective as having something on a week-to-week basis where people could invite their friends and their coworkers and colleagues to attend.
So would your parishioners attend the Eucharistic liturgy and then invite their friends to come to the well afterwards?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I mean, it sounds very innovative. I got to ask the question, forgive me, how was it received both by your parishioners and your fellow clergymen?
The congregation loves it.
Mm-hmm.
We have people actually coming from other Coptic churches who come down for the weekend mm-hmm. who want to attend the well with us. It's something which is, so it's after the liturgy has finished, and you know the liturgy is an intense, not intense, but it's something which it's a high investment kind of a service where you know it's like the climax of everything that we do.
Well, someone who walks into an Orthodox church, whether they be Coptic or Greek, and they walk in from the outside, they could feel like an alien. There's no doubt.
Exactly.
About that.
We
just can't hide that.
Absolutely.
It is what it is.
So this is an opportunity for our own parishioners to relax, kind of kick back, have an enjoyable time together, have some time to kind of mingle with one another in a lighthearted kind of a way.
Mm-hmm.
And really, like, the topics that we talk about inside the well, my goal is always to be helpful to people. You know, and I feel like that's what our Lord Jesus Christ was more than anything else, is that he talked about what the people needed to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So we talk about marriage, okay, and relationships. Why? Because that's something that every couple, Orthodox, not Orthodox, Catholic, Baptist, it doesn't matter who you are. If you're married, then you need help in your marriage, and you would like help with that. We talk about raising kids.
You're the speaker in all of these?
I'm the primary speaker.
We
get other speakers, but I'm the primary one.
Okay. Well, I mean, there's a lot to be learned from other structures. What I gather here is you're looking at methodology and not necessarily theology.
Exactly. You said that perfectly.
Right, and so you're opening the door and you're saying, okay, we have what we believe to be the truth, and it's not a good thing, as we've said many times in this program, to be the best kept secret in America.
Exactly.
That's not something to be proud of.
Exactly.
And so if we have this treasure, we have to deliver it in a method that the populace is ready to hear in a welcoming way. So I applaud that.
Thank you.
I'm sure it's different though for some people, because it sounds more Protestant. Someone would come in and they'll sit there and then the priest will talk or the pastor will talk for 45 minutes.
Right.
So how do you make that experience an Orthodox one? Tell us your secrets there, Father. What
sure.
are you doing to kind of spin it to Orthodoxy? Because that's what you're doing.
You said it perfectly, is that our orthodoxy, unfortunately, sometimes we water it down and make it shallow to the point that we look at it as a method. But orthodoxy to me is much deeper than the how we talk about things or the methodology we use. It's the message that we share. And the message that we share is Christ and the hope of glory that we can have Christ in us and the communion that we have with Christ through the sacraments, through the church. So it's our message that makes us orthodox. One of the things that, you know, I've heard this before that people say, you know, that's a Protestant idea. Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of those terms that I think we use a little bit too liberally and dangerously. Hmm. Because I will say is my goal isn't to be not Protestant. My goal is to be orthodox. So if there's something in orthodoxy that's against something I'm doing, that's of great concern to me. But, for example, when I was ordained as a priest 12 years ago, when I first got ordained, you know, I did some things that I guess were out of the norm for an orthodox priest. And one of the noticeable ones is that I walk around when I give a sermon. And someone told me, you know, you shouldn't do that. And I said, why? Like, I was naive. I said, why? They said, because it's not orthodox. Mm-hmm. And at first, I took this kind of, and then I thought about it, and I spoke to my bishop, and I told him very simply, I said, I'll do whatever you tell me to do. But I can't imagine that orthodoxy is as shallow as whether you stand or you sit, or you stand in one place or you move around.
Wow. Yeah, sure.
I said, to be honest, I can't talk on the phone. Like, even right now, if you'd see me, I can't talk on the phone without walking around. So it's something that, it's just something ingrained in me. So to me, what makes me orthodox isn't whether I walk or whether I sit. It doesn't matter if you know, I speak with passion or I speak, you know, in a monotone way. What makes me orthodox is what I say. Mm-hmm. And to your question about how you make that service orthodox, when I talk about marriage, okay, the environment isn't one that you would see in orthodox church, but what you're going to hear is orthodox theology about marriage. You're going to hear about two becoming one. And I might even slip in there, as I did when we had our recent series about the crowning ceremony. Why is it that we use crowns? So the message is coming through, but it's the method is in a way that people can digest.
Father, one of the key problems for orthodoxy in the New Worlds is the balance between preserving the ethnic heritage versus really providing a nurturing Christian community for the broader society and younger generations. And I think that's what you're trying to do that, and I applaud that effort. Do you have any further thoughts about that? I mean, is a balance necessary? Should we be using more of a, instead of a shotgun, which is shooting out 30 pellets, should we be using a rifle where we're actually, and please don't think I'm shooting people.
Sure.
But what I'm saying here is, should it be more of a directed and targeted approach, one by one by one?
I personally believe that the era of the huge church, which kind of accommodates the needs of everyone, I don't believe so much in that model. The model that I believe is the one that's going to be successful going forward is more of the churches that allow people to represent their culture, okay, in a way that they feel comfortable with. For example, as I said, we have immigrants coming from Egypt, and those immigrants need to be served in a culture that's conducive to them. But we also have Americans who are just joining the faith who know nothing about that culture, and they have their own culture that they're coming with.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of trying to fit everyone into one building and forcing everyone to kind of basically letting everyone feel uncomfortable, I think that we need to move to the point where we have smaller churches, you know, and we allow those churches to express. I'll be honest, an Orthodox church in D.C. has a different culture than an Orthodox church in Dallas mm-hmm. versus an Orthodox church in Alaska. So I think that the key is that we may have different cultures, and we need to allow people to express those cultures, but never changing the faith.
I got you.
And I think the dangerous thing is when we look at the culture and we connect it to the faith. One of the stories that I love in the scripture is in Acts chapter 6. And I was just reading it recently, and I heard a nice Bible study about it. And it was speaking about when they chose the deacons. And it says that there was a complaint against the disciples by the Hellenists. And the Hellenists were being neglected in the daily distribution. So what the early church did is the early church saw that this problem wasn't a spiritual problem, it was a cultural problem.
Mm-hmm.
The Hellenists were those who had immigrated, and they had a different culture. Now, what the apostles could have done, if they didn't understand the importance of culture, is they could have told the Hellenists, that you guys aren't spiritual enough. You guys need to accept the fact that there's a delay, and you guys need to not complain and just be thankful. And they could have told them like that. But instead, they said, this is a cultural issue, not just a spiritual one. So what they did is they assigned seven deacons. And what we see about the seven deacons is they chose other Hellenists to serve those Hellenists. So they chose Stephen, a man who was a Hellenist, because they saw that he had the culture that he could then relate with those who were complaining. And you see that throughout the book of Acts, especially, that this discussion that the early church in Jerusalem was very careful. They said, you know, we have to allow people to be their own culture. And in Acts 15, where they said that we should put no greater burden upon them than the necessary things. And they said, the faith to us is abstain from things offered to idols, abstain from blood, and abstain from sexual immorality. And they said, after that, if you want to circumcise, that's great. If you don't, that's great. If you want to eat this way, that's great. If you want to eat that way, that's great. They knew that their orthodoxy was deeper than the method. It was the message inside it.
Father, I was just on the internet. I went to your website of your parish. It's fantastic. You have a popular blog. Your parish website is the most contemporary Orthodox parish site, frankly, I've seen. Why did you design the website that way?
The way I look at it is that we have a great message. And we not even a great message. We have a essential message, a life-altering. We're talking life or death with the message that we have to share. And something that grand must be presented in a professional way. And in this country especially, maybe in other countries or back home it's different, but if you're trying to reach the people in this country, the way you present your message and the way you present your church has oftentimes more to do with their acceptance than actually what it is you're presenting. And I've seen that many times. I know a lot of people who are totally bought into Orthodoxy, and they believe, and they've read the books, and they know the history, and they're bought in. And then they attend a church service, and then they can't relate to the way it's presented, whether it's messy or disorganized or it's crowded or there's no parking or the people are rude. The message they believe in, but the problem is the way it's presented is in a way that is a turnoff to a lot of people. So the way I see it is we have a beautiful gem here. We have if we have the nicest steak in the whole wide world, then I'm going to put that on a nice platter to match it. I'm not going to serve it in a trash can. And I feel that way with our website, is that we are ambassadors of the great King. And if we are going to represent him accordingly, then we need to do all things as to the Lord, not to men, as best as we can.
Father, thank you very much for being on the program today. And we wish you every success and hope to visit your parish sometime very soon.
Thank you very much. Welcome anytime.
Well, a lot of great content and a lot to remember from today's edition of Come Receive the Light. Father Anthony is with St. Timothy and St. Athanasios Church in Arlington, Virginia. And the website, I don't think we mentioned that, is stsachurch.org. And don't forget orthogals.com. And then lastly, we're a nonprofit outreach, and we have an opportunity for any contribution you make to the ministry during the months of July and August to be doubled. So consider what you might be able to do, pray about it, and send along a contribution. You can do that easily when you go to our website, and safely as well, of course, at myocn.net. Thanks, as always, to our executive producer, Ann Dankert. I'm Mike Trout. Our host is Father Christopher Metropoulos. Join us again next week for another edition of Come Receive the Light. And remember to always have faith in what you listen to.